Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
Good morning. My name is Eddie Hamilton. I'm really enjoying the summer. I'm lucky enough to stay home with my kids, and I just keep thinking about how much I'm enjoying being outside this summer, not wearing socks, just enjoying the hot air and the cool breeze. So that's one of the things I'm really enjoying right now.
You got a package for Eddie Hamilton?
Oh, yeah, that's me. I'll take it. Sorry, I wasn't expecting this. Aha, wonderful, thank you. What did I get here? Oh, it says Eddie Hamilton, you are an artist. Huh. Well, I got a little story about that, I guess, if you got a minute. So when I was in high school, I had a really wonderful art teacher, which was a really good thing because I was not a very good student. I didn't get good grades in school except for art. I even manipulated my schedule that I could be in the art class 3 hours out of the 7 hour school day. That's how much I enjoyed the other classes. So I spent all my time with this art teacher. And one of the things he did was he would have us do a critique about once a week, where we would get whatever work we were working on, bring it out in the hallway away from the studio, and put our work up, and we'd all look at each other's work. And he had just a couple rules. You had to say something that you liked about the work you were talking about, but you also had to say something that you would change or something that you would do different about the work. And since I was in the art class all the time, and I'd draw pictures all the time, all the other students thought I was this great artist, and they'd always have nothing but great things to say about the drawings I was doing. I would find drawings in like Sports Illustrated of usually hockey players, and I'd do these really great colored pencil drawings of them, trying to make it match the picture exactly. And one of these critiques, all the work is up in the hall, and I'm getting a lot of praise from my peers again about how wonderful my drawings are. And he stands back and he says, "That's really great, but what else can you do?" And that really got me, and it got me, I think, at the right time. I understood it right away. It was for me to explore, me to do different things. And after that critique, I was doing these big, bold, elaborate paintings. Now he talked to me about doing some different things. You know, he said, "Well, maybe you should be a teacher, maybe you should do this." And I wasn't ready to hear that. I said, "Well, I can't be a teacher, I'm a bad student. I get really bad grades, I'm in the art room all the time." So I kind of discounted that at that time, but maybe, Greg, what else do you think you could do?
Actually, a lot of people ask me that. Well, good morning, everybody, once again. So we're doing this through July. We're talking about boxes. We're particularly talking about like recognizing our boxes and then getting out of them. We know you always get out of one box and get into another box. We never live without a box, but we can get bigger and healthier and better boxes all the time. And I think gradually start admitting that, yeah, I'm in a box, but I don't have to stay here. We can get comfortable with, you know, building them, but also smashing them. So that's kind of what we're all about. And you know, being a church where people don't like church, we just have to kind of recognize that religion has sort of been one of the big forces for putting people in boxes. And not only people, but putting God in a box. And, you know, that's, I don't think, how it's supposed to be, because, to see ourselves in our boxes, whether it's like a religious box, are you Lutheran, Methodist, Catholic, Muslim, atheist, nothing, Hindu, you know, those kinds of boxes, I don't know if they're categories are convenient for talking about things and putting people into boxes, but do they really help us? Do they really help us connect with God? Do they help us connect with each other? But it isn't just religion who does it. I mean, and the reason religion does it is that religion is something people make out of a genuine relationship with that which is beyond us and with each other. We create these religions. But people in general, we just like making boxes. And we like to put each other in them, and we like to put ourselves in them for all kinds of reasons. And I don't think we want to do that. We want to get beyond that. We want to start seeing the possibilities. And as a community, we want to be the kind of community that can help each other see life beyond those boxes. Jesus is like that too. I mean, the Jesus that we begin to discover when we really read the Bible is a Jesus that is not a box putter inner or someone who lives in a box. Of course, we've done him the disservice of making, you know, we decide who Jesus was, and we usually make Jesus be a perfect representative of the club that we already wanted. And we read all his story about his lies through those filters so that he doesn't upset anything. In fact, all he does is, reinforce what we already thought about the world. I love Anne Lamott's phrase, not talking about Jesus, but about God. She says, you know you created God in your own image if your God hates all the same people you do. Convenient, yes. Not helpful. Not where God certainly wanted to get us. When I think about Jesus, and this is going way, way back to when I was a teenager, I always saw Jesus as a rug puller. You've seen the cartoons, you know, someone steps on the rug, someone else yanks it, and boom, person falls down. And that, if you really read the New Testament, that's what Jesus is doing time after time after time. In fact, if you want to follow along on the back of your Sunday paper, you'll find an outline there. You can fill that in if you want. But Jesus was a rug puller. And no matter what situation he was in, he would see how people are stuck and how that was keeping them from being the person they could. It was keeping them from the relationships with each other and with the world and understanding things. He saw how they were getting their feet firmly planted and said, this is where I am, this is who I am, this is what I do. And they had their ruts and their routines and their rules to reinforce it, to make sure they never had to move. And he said, this isn't going to work. So he yanks on the rug. Now, well, it just verse after verse. So let me just give you one example. You maybe remember these. They're all recorded in Matthew's gospel. It happens over and over and over again. But Jesus keeps saying, you have heard it said, well, I say unto you, all right? The example I think I put up there is, you have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy, but I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Yank on the rug, right? Now, the big thing about this is Jesus doesn't pull the rug out from underneath your feet to make you fall down. He isn't trying to trip you up. He's trying to get you dancing. I mean, there's something about being static and just posing and being who you are. That's safe. That's comfortable. I know how to do that. I can just keep doing it. But then there's like mixing it all up. There's movement, which is maybe unpredictable and it's awkward, but it's also grace-filled and it's hopeful. And sometimes it's choreographed and sometimes it's spontaneous. But we do it with each other, and we don't judge it. We live it, and we decide what works and what doesn't work, and it gets into that spontaneous relationship with all this. So Jesus isn't a rug puller in order to trip you up. He does it to get you dancing. We need a lot more dancing in our world, and we want to be the kind of community that can do that kind of dancing. So if some of you kids during the music are going to dance, that'd be great as well. So during this month of July, we picked out some people from the Jacobsville community who are doing some fantastic out-of-the-box thinking. And we're engaging them in some conversation. But we're not doing it just to hear how they have done some out-of-the-box sort of thinking, some rug pulling in their own lives or in the lives of people around them. We're doing it so that we could get insights into ourselves and learn from how they're doing it so that we could figure out how to be doing it ourselves. And you all met Eddie Hamilton. Eddie is actually a pretty extraordinary guy. Eddie was... you'll hear more about him. He is a painter. He also was a subject of a Minnesota Original. TPT, Public Television, does these Minnesota Original videos. And then just recently, last couple of months, he did a TEDx talk. Mm-hmm. And so you're kind of famous. He also is a 17-time recipient of Humility Awards.
And, thank you.
And you were smart enough not to wear them because we'd have to take them away.
Right.
Did I properly embarrass you yet?
Yep. Okay. Thoroughly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but the reason that Eddie's engaging in some neat ideas and neat thoughts, and I think it really all comes out of this experience he had in high school. Well, I don't know. We saw a tipping point maybe there for you. And this question that came out of it of what else can you do just seems like a really powerful one. A lot of people would hear that question about like what else can you do and feel threatened by it. They wouldn't feel opened up by it. So I don't know, what was it about your high school art teacher that could open doors with you for you with that question rather than shut you down?
Well, I think that when we talked in the past, I talked about he built a relationship with me over time, and so that I would be more, you're more open, I think, to getting criticism from somebody that you have a relationship with, and if it's a stranger. So I think that was one really big thing, and I think we had practice at going through critiques, and it was like practice saying something that you would change about this thing. So you kind of get that built up a little bit, so you practice considering or thinking about change, not actually doing it all the time, but you practice, you know, erasing things and drawing them over, or, you know, editing a paper and rewriting it. So there's some practice in it. But I think that relationship was the biggest thing. But there was some of the, what else can you do? Well, I'll show you what else I can do. And you're using that energy in that, I'll show you, in a kind of a positive way. But yeah, it had a number of different aspects to it.
So he was like asking you to step up your game, kind of, wasn't he?
I think he was, yeah. But it was a challenge, uh-huh. I think, to explore. Think about what you're doing and why you're doing it, too. In the relationship that I had with him, I kind of felt like that was more the direction. It wasn't, now can you draw even more realistically? Is that your passion? Is that what you want to do? Maybe he sensed that it wasn't. And so he was giving me the supplies and resources and tools to get outside that drawing specific pictures box.
So how would you typify the kind of art you were doing when he, before that, to the kind of art that it moved you towards?
And it didn't happen right away. It took years. The one story I can think of that maybe helps explain a little bit. In my 20s somewhere, I took a metal sculpture class at the U, and I thought maybe I want to explore sculpture. And you spend half the time learning how to weld, because none of us knew how to weld, so you got to figure out how to do that. And then there was an assignment, kind of a longer term assignment, and I chose to make a sculpture of a tree. But I didn't want to just do what a tree looked like. I wanted to do what a tree felt like, because I was like, I want to do something different.
Right.
And so it was this, it must have looked horrible because I wasn't really trying to make it look good, but there were sponges on it and strings holding things together. And I had these silver shiny things to reflect the leaves. And so it was this big pile of metal and sponges all tied together, because I thought, this is what a tree feels like. And this is what I want my, there was some welding and some metal in there, but I wanted it to feel like a tree. And we got to the critique and put it in amongst all the students there. And the first thing somebody says is, well, that's not art. I do art, and that's not art. Okay, well, A, maybe I'm onto something good. Maybe I'm not, but I think I really enjoyed the process I was in. I felt like this really feels like a tree. And whether somebody else thinks it's art or not was up for discussion, but I felt good about it. And I think the whole class, I remember, had a really good discussion about it. And the instructor at the time was really good about how to talk about art and do critiques and what is art. And so it opened things up. And that was maybe one of the points that I remember when I'm looking back, that painting from a feeling, or making art from a feeling instead of necessarily a visual way, was really a neat, interesting, what else can you do for me? Because it was hard. I couldn't look at a tree and paint a tree then. That's what I used to do. I used to look at something and draw it or paint it, and it would look like it was supposed to, and success, right? But then if I painted from a feeling or emotional standpoint, you just can't, okay, I know how that feels, and I know what that looks like, and then I'll just do it, and everybody gets it. So that's what it shifted for me in the long run.
Anyway, the reason we want to talk about this question, what else can you do? And I think one big piece of this is to understand the fact that this isn't a put down. This isn't a shut you down sort of thing. This is an open you up. This is giving you a possibility and saying, I see in you something more than you've ever shown us. What else can you do? So Eddie, you got that challenge, and you did explore it, and you've had a couple of chances to verbalize that with Minnesota Originals and with on your TED Talk, but then also just in your everyday experience as an artist and as a teacher. But as we talked about, we found a couple of kind of important components to it, and those are on your Sunday paper. How did these questions about, like, what else can you do, where did that start leading you into stuff that really felt like this is more important for me to do? Not just literal art, but like what? Art that expresses something, engages, pulls people in.
So one of the things I thought was interesting about it is, well, there's the people that say, I don't get it, or that's not art, or I get all kinds of interesting comments, but then there's people that really connects with it. People will stop and spend more time with it, my work sometimes, and ask a lot of questions about what does this mean to you, and they'll share what it means to them when they look at it. And I'd really tried to start including the viewer in the experience with art to see where that would go. And that's been what's really interesting to me. So I did this, I got a grant through the Minnesota State Arts Board to do a project I called the Shadows Project, which was where I was gonna go out and meet people who were different than me. I chose to look for people living with disabilities in my community, and I was gonna see what I could learn from them about how they experience their community different than I do. I don't have any problem getting around, or I can go any place I wanna go, do anything I wanna do pretty much, but I know there's a segment of the population that's not the case, so I wanted to go talk to these people, go in the community with them, and collaborate on paintings together. And one of the people I met was Bob, and he was living in North Minneapolis when I met him, living with muscular dystrophy. And he loved to get out in his neighborhood and his community, so I'd go visit him, and he'd, all right, let's go. He'd grab his dog, he'd put water, cold water on his wheelchair to hand out to people he met out in the community, and we'd go for a walk, and I had trouble keeping up with him because he was cruising, but we'd go and we'd talk to just about everybody we ran into, or he would. I would listen. He'd hand out bottles of water to people he thought needed a bottle of water, and he just loved being out in the community. And then we talked about, you know, in the winter, what do you do? Well, he's isolated in the winter because he can't get out many places. People don't shovel sidewalks, people don't have ramps or accessible homes, so you can't really go to friends' houses and things like that, so it was really isolating. And one of the things he started doing is writing poetry. And he'd write about depression and being isolated and how the different things that he did to try to overcome those things. And one of them was expressing his feelings through poetry. And so we spent time together, and he came to my studio, and we talked about what this painting could look like, what could represent him. And so I don't know, we might have a picture someplace, but I put one of his poems, Beauty, he titled it, which really captured the depression and the isolation he was feeling, but then also the simple things in life that he really cherished. And so I did this painting with him, and we were at the exhibition, and mingling around, and there's five or six of these large paintings. They're 8 feet by 16 feet, so kind of almost a mural size. And there was a woman standing in front of his painting. Nobody else was in front of it. And I walked over to her, and she had tears coming down her face. And she's like, this is just wonderful. And we stood briefly together and chatted a little bit. And I felt like that was one of those key moments where there was a deeper connection for that person and the art. than I could have done it in another way if I was drawing up pictures of hockey players still. That's not the only time that somebody has come and like they've cried in front of a painting, when sometimes when we're talking about it or what it means to them, and they'll start talking about their life. And so we're getting to that deeper emotional connection. And for me, especially, I'm pretty quiet and reserved. I like to stay at home. I'm not like Bob, who likes to get out and hand out water. I like to be on my couch. So it was a way for me to really get out there. And well, now I'm connecting with somebody who's crying with me. That's uncomfortable, but it's more interesting too.
And what else can you do? Yeah. Gets you there.
And the question of what else can I do got me there.
Gets me there. Yeah, I think that's really important. So we look at your figures there. That literal realism of the hockey player. We saw that picture a little while ago. Then you have these other characters. Just pop to another one. Why do you make? Yeah, like what? Why do you make him like that?
Why do I make him like that? I thought a way to communicate a feeling that could be understood by the most people in the most ways was to use very simple lines and very simple characters. Kind of like a child's drawing, maybe, where the big character is the most important. The smaller characters are less so. Simple movement, simple head tilt, simple colors can communicate an awful lot.
So you're trying to be less prescriptive. You're allowing the viewer to.
Yeah, yeah. So like this one, you know, there's three people there, or three people like figures, and I'll get comments when people are looking at my work saying, "Oh, that's my family. There's three people in my family," and those types of things all the time. So if I add a lot of detail, you know, to it, then you get less of that connection. So I think the more abstract, the more vague it is, the more people can connect. See, there's the three-person family again.
There you go. So you want me to work. I have to look at your stuff, and I can't just appreciate what you did. I have to participate. I have to work and decide what I think.
You have to do a little.
Yeah. You're asking me, like, what else can I do? What else can I think?
Yeah. Well, what do you think it is?
Yeah. Sound like a preacher. So one of the... Now, some of you saw us. So Eddie did a big mural for us Easter a couple years ago. And so during the whole gathering, he's painting this big, huge mural, which was tying into what we were talking about, which was just fantastic. And right at the end of the gathering, while everybody's just kind of glued and looking at this beautiful thing up here, he pulls out white paint and a roller and just paints the whole thing blank again. Why do you like doing that so much?
That's a good question. It's I suppose I get sometimes, you know, it's a different answer depending on when you ask it.
Uh-huh.
But it's not always like hanging on to everything. I don't like to hang on to everything. I remember like a couple of years ago, my wife and I, we got a big dumpster and we cleared it out. And like, well, we'll never fill this huge dumpster that we got. And before you know it, it was full over the top, and we're like, well, it's not big enough now. Once you get used to throwing things away, it gets easier. And once you get used to not hanging on to things, it gets easier. So I think it's that not hanging on to the past helps make new things going forward. So if I don't look back at my what I've done in the past, my previous paintings, then I'm really more in the moment with what I'm doing now. So it's really helpful, the letting go.
Another Jacob Swoller that would be fun to have be part of the series, but he's in Puerto Rico right now, is Nick Tassler, and he does a lot of thinking. A lot of you have heard him speak about stuff, but he talks about making decisions, and he's really insistent that there's not right or wrong decisions. The purpose of a decision is to help you figure out the next decision. It's setting you up for the next decision. It sounds a little bit like you do that with your painting. Like, I did this painting, worked really hard, but it isn't an end unto itself. This is really, it helps me understand what the next picture is, so it's okay. I can white it out and paint it again.
You can do it again.
You can do it again.
Yeah.
Wow. So I just like hear that being all about life. Like, I do stuff, and I think I have to get it right. I can't make a mistake. I gotta be that, rather than living with a little bit of grace and forgiveness and saying, no, whatever I did right now was setting me up to who I could be, what I could do tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And you're finding like a physical way to interact with that.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, you know, again, Jacob's well reflection on that too is we talk a lot about helping people find their own spiritual practices. And I know that sounds kind of all mystical, like you're supposed to find your way to get all Zen-like or something like that. And if you can do that, great. I probably am not quite there. To me, the whole purpose of a spiritual practice is it's something that it interrupts you and it helps you do two things. It helps you get bigger than yourself and it helps you connect with other people more deeply. That's the purpose of a spiritual practice. It get bigger than yourself and connect with other people more deeply. And for you, this mantra of what else can I do, which you've been listening to since 17, 18 years old, has sort of become a mantra. It's become kind of a spiritual discipline that you practice, or you what? It hunts you down.
It does. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was with art for a long time, and then it kind of gets into other aspects, all aspects of your life, really, like relationships, or do I want to, you know, whatever, wherever you are, do I want to be here? If I don't want to be here, I don't have to be here. I can go where I need to go, where it feels right. Which kind of gets. I was a graphic designer for a long time, and you know, perfect career. You're creative. I was kind of good with computers. I'll be a graphic designer, and that's who I am. And years later, you meet, you know, people from high school that you haven't seen in a long time, and you know, I'm a graphic designer. And like, I knew it. That's perfect.
It's what it said in the box.
Perfect career for you. You're the one in the art department all the time, so it makes sense. But as I went on in my career as a graphic designer, I started thinking, well, what else can I do? And you know, I'd volunteer in schools a lot, and I really had a great time doing that, but had a hard time finding time to do that because I was busy working a lot. And then I thought, okay, if I ever, you know, win the lottery or I have the time, I'm going to go back to school to be a teacher. I'm going to be a special education teacher, because that's usually where they put the volunteers, and so that's where I wound up volunteering and really liking it. And you didn't know that? That's where they put the volunteers.
They always put my kids' classes. I didn't catch on that was a special ed place.
Yeah, 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 that's where they put the volunteers. And then the company I was working for, you know, I was in management. I was doing great, and but I had decided, I don't know, years before, that, you know, this is what I should do. And then the company got bought out. There was a bunch of layoffs, severance package. Riley was six. Like, oh, I'm going to be a stay-at-home dad and I'm going back to school. And it took a long time. I didn't have my bachelor's degree at that time. I never finished. So I had to get my bachelor's degree and then go get my teaching license. And it took me about 8 years total to finish.
Else you could do.
But now I'm doing it. And then the other thing is, like, okay, now I did all of that. Now I got to do it, right? Now I got to teach kids how to read and write and do things. And that's a big consequence to asking, what else can you do now? Because now you got to do what you thought that you were going to do, which is okay. I'm okay with it, but...
Yeah. Well, it does get very real. But again, you know, having talked with you about this, those basic things that you heard from your high school art teacher, he created a relationship with you. You knew he believed in you. Mm-hmm. He knew you could do good stuff. And you felt secure in that relationship. And then he could challenge you to say, so what else can you do, Eddie? And that's kind of what you do with the kids at school, is build a relationship, create a deeper connection,
yep.
Then go for that experience and call them out beyond themselves and say, so, okay, we like each other, you're a good kid. Now, I actually need you to learn something.
Yeah, and there's definitely a lot of barriers to that. And I'm still learning, but it definitely starts with that relationship. If the student doesn't trust you, they're not going to they're not going to listen to you. And I've learned some things the hard way, said the wrong thing at the wrong time, and lost a student for a long period of time, and it's a lot of work to get that student back. But, yeah.
That's good. Yeah. Well, there is a lot more from Eddie, but I hope you kind of, we had a bunch of the things we could have touched on. We'll post up his Minnesota Originals video that you can watch, put on Facebook. The TED Talk isn't up yet, isn't available yet, but when that is, we'll put there as well. But just engage this guy in conversation. Pick his brain, and he'll be glad to pick yours as well. And, yeah, so thanks for being with us today.
Thanks.
All right. Good enough.
Thanks for listening. If you found this podcast valuable, please pass it along to others. And we'd love to hear from you, too. You can email us at info@jacobs-well.net or message Jacobs Well Minneapolis on Facebook. We see what we do as a community really making a difference for people. Since you're listening, you probably have, too. If you'd like to make a donation to support this work, you can find ways at jacobs-well.net/give. Thanks. Listen again next week or join us in person Sunday mornings at 10:30.